It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. This is a festive week in the Steel City, beginning with the July 4th celebration and fireworks yesterday and last night, and culminating with events to commemorate Pittsburgh's 200th birthday. Today, Mayor Bill Peduto is with us in studio to talk about the Steel City's bicentennial party planned for this weekend, as well as some other important issues. Mayor Peduto, happy birthday for 200. You're looking great.
Thank you.
I mean the city.
I saw somebody at a coffee shop today, and they're like, happy birthday. I'm like, no, it's October. They're like, no, the city. And I was like, oh, yeah, this week. So 200 years ago today, we elected our first city council.
200 years ago today.
Today.
Can you name any of the members?
Ebenezer Denny.
Ebenezer Denny.
Because he was selected by the council to be the first mayor on July the 9th.
And he'll be at the meeting tomorrow night. No, wait a minute.
His family's going to be here. They're coming in from, there's families of former mayors coming in as far away as Europe. I think Gloria Faruzin put this whole thing together. I think she has nearly 300 descendants of mayors coming in to the city. Of course, they're paying their own way, and they'll be filling hotel rooms, but they're kind of excited. And, you know, it's the celebration and the parade itself will really encompass all of Pittsburgh. So different groups will sort of form a chronological history of the city as they march in the parade led by a Native American tribe.
Well, there is a lot going on, and we're going to run down all of that. And you can join the conversation with a comment or question for the mayor at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Mayor Peduto, a lot to get to today, and much of it things that we are excited to talk about. But unfortunately, Pittsburgh is making national news today for the wrong reasons. A wonderful 4th of July celebration was marred by the shootings of four people downtown shortly after the fireworks display. Three of them were taken to UPMC Mercy, and the fourth victim, a 15-year-old girl shot in the leg, taken to Children's Hospital. Mayor, what is your reaction today? What can you tell us about the investigation into the apparently two male individuals involved in the shooting?
Yeah, it seems like the incident occurred with a fight between the two males. You know, there are a lot of witnesses who were right around there, and our first thing to anybody who has any information is to please call 911 and to please share that information with the police. The police were on scene immediately. There was a lot of protection downtown for the fireworks. Unfortunately, an isolated incident did occur. Of course, this is happening again and again, and the age seems to get younger and younger, and that's a national trend that has been occurring as well. Guns are very, very prevalent. Young people who shouldn't have the ability to get them are able to get them illegally, and we have had difficulty getting any assistance from Harrisburg to close that loophole. That being said, again, the police were on the scene immediately, and we just asked for the help of anybody who was around at the time to help share some of the information of what they saw.
And as far as the question of why this is happening, you mentioned the prevalence of guns, but is there something beyond that? That, you know, how does someone end up opening fire in the vicinity of women and children and innocent bystanders?
It's a culture. I mean, you think back in the 1980s, and if you were in high school then, you know, a gun incident was so rare. There were fist fights that occurred all the time. And maybe it a rare occurrence, there was a stabbing, but kids were not shooting each other. And, you know, where we went from there to where we are today has become a gun culture. You know, I believe in the Second Amendment, and I believe people should have the right to own a weapon. But at this point, it's everywhere. People will go into a neighborhood, they'll open up a trunk, they'll have guns that are available, they'll trade guns for drugs. The people who are kids or ex-felons who shouldn't have guns have readily access to it. And the only response we get out of Harrisburg or Washington, D.C. is there's nothing we can do about it. There's no solution. I said it before. If we knew that a toaster killed 30,000 people a year, we would do something about that toaster. if we have technology that's available that can open your cell phone just by putting your finger on it, why can't we use the same technology on a gun? What? How does that take away anyone's second right to be able to purchase and own guns? And why do you fight it so hard? And why has it become this type of a culture? You know, 30,000 people die every year. And the only response is there's nothing we can do about it. It's a public health issue. And if we attacked it as a public health issue, we could lessen that number. We could change that culture. And kids wouldn't be walking around at a 4th of July party or a 4th of July celebration with a loaded gun in their pocket. It's little things that we can try to do at a local level, but we need help at a federal and state level.
Well, one of the things that you've tried to do is eliminate the straw purchases of guns. And now that the city has won a court battle over Pittsburgh's straw purchase gun ordinance intended to discourage city residents from buying firearms for felons who are barred from owning guns, will you enforce it? Reportedly, you're hesitant to do so, and explain why that is.
Yeah, because of the state legislature passing a bill that was written by the NRA, and they admit they wrote it. The bill itself not only allows any third party to sue a municipality, even if they are not a part of the lawsuit. In other words, you have to have standing in order to go into a courtroom. You have to have had harm done to you to sue somebody else. The state, for the first time in Pennsylvania's history, has granted to gun organizations, including the NRA, the right to sue cities in the state of Pennsylvania, even if they don't have standing before the court. Never happened before, for any reason. So if we pass a lost and stolen handgun bill, which we have, and it says that anytime your gun is either stolen or you lose it, you have to report it stolen or lost within 72 hours. Now, gun organizations that have no standing because they haven't been harmed have been granted the right to sue cities across the state of Pennsylvania. But it doesn't stop there. It doesn't stop with simply changing what has never been done in the state of Pennsylvania's history and granting this to the gun manufacturing lobby. It goes even further, and it says that even if the city were to win in court, they would still be liable for all the costs of the other side. So there is nothing stopping the NRA from hiring five New York law firms at $100,000 an hour and just billing crazy amounts of legal fees and then holding the city liable and the city taxpayers have to pay it. So every city, there are over 100 cities in the state of Pennsylvania who pass lost and stolen handgun legislation because it's common sense. If you lose your car, you report it stolen. If somebody breaks into your house, you call the police. If you lose your gun, you should report it stolen. And why does that even make a difference? Because the majority of the homicides in the city of Pittsburgh are done with a gun that has either been reported as lost or stolen after the fact. And it's a get-out-of-jail-free card. It's a loophole that exists where people come in and they sell illegal guns in the city, and they're able to walk scotch-free because there's nothing being done in Harrisburg to close the loophole. So cities themselves, over 100 throughout the state of Pennsylvania, took it upon themselves to pass it. The state passes legislation that would then bankrupt cities for passing it and give standing to an organization that has no standing in the courts of over 200 years of history in Pennsylvania the first time. So if we, and they're ready to pass the bill again, and the only defense we have this time is we have a governor who has said he'd veto it. So we'll see what happens over the course of the next couple of months. When that bill passed the first time, over the 100 cities, every one of them except Lancaster, Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh immediately got rid of their laws because of the fear of bankrupting their city.
Well, you walked in here, I believe it was 2 years ago, 2014. You were actually on your way into this studio to do this program, and you had seen on your phone a message saying that the city of Pittsburgh was being sued by the NRA.
Yeah.
So it's not as though these are hollow threats. from an organization that wants to fight what many people call a common sense law.
Yeah. There, Mayor Gray of Lancaster, then Mayor Nutter of Philadelphia, and I decided we were going to fight it, and that we couldn't, if we let this happen, imagine the other types of laws that Harrisburg could create against cities or even against individuals that would strip away basic rights. And by creating laws that would be punitive to bankrupt cities or individuals or companies or anybody by creating that type of legislation. So it got struck down in the Supreme Court, but it got struck down on a technicality. Now it has to be struck down by a governor's signature. And once we clear these unbelievable hurdles, I mean, we're talking about reporting your gun as being lost or stolen. That doesn't say that you can't own a gun. It doesn't say you can't own 100 guns. It simply says that when it's lost or stolen, it's no longer a legal weapon. It is an illegal weapon. It's stolen, lost, that you have to report it. And we can't even get that type of common sense out of our state legislature at this point.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is the mayor of Pittsburgh, Bill Peduto. And do you want to go on to some other news?
Sure. What else is happening? Happy stuff, I hope.
Yes. There's more celebrating to do this week. A two-day party is starting Friday to commemorate the day Pittsburgh incorporated as a city 200 years ago in 1816. We know that a lot of planning has gone into this. So you mentioned a little bit at the outset, but what is in store for people?
So Andy Masick called it stone soup when we announced that what we were going to do, meaning we didn't have a lot of money. We weren't going to use the city's budget in order to fund a big celebration. I know that Montreal, they're celebrating, I think, like 350 years or some extraordinary anniversary, and it's they're spending tens of millions of dollars on this. They're really going all out. So what we've decided is really partnering with a lot of different groups and organizations. The History Center is throwing a party at the History Center on Friday evening. A lot of local bands, Joe Grushecki, Billy Price, a whole bunch of others will be performing. Food and libations that will be all available that Friday night. I think it's a $40, $35 ticket. I'm not really, can't remember, but it's affordable. And everyone's invited to come on down to the History Center and have a great party. The next morning, 11 a.m., going to start a parade of parades in a sense. You know, we have a St. Patrick's Day parade that celebrates Irish heritage. We have an African American heritage parade. We have a Columbus Day parade that celebrates Italian heritage. We have a Veterans Day parade that celebrates veterans. Imagine if we pulled them all together and we even added the Bhutanese community and the Stanley Cup.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So, and do it in a chronological order of the history of Pittsburgh.
And it's so Pittsburgh to party, you know, late into the night, the night before, and then get up early for a parade the next.
Exactly.
Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
And then right after the parade, they're down in Market Square. All the different nationalities that will be marching in the parade are going to be doing dance performances in Market Square. And then starting at 6:30, we're going to have a concert, or at 6 o'clock, I'm sorry, that we'll have a concert down at the Point that will sort of be an all-star jazz, country, oldies, and rock combination that will culminate at 9:30 with fireworks.
Sounds like a terrific couple of days.
Family friendly, all the events, food trucks down at the Point, so you don't even have to worry about dinner. And we encourage people to come out and celebrate our city.
Now, I have to ask you, the cornerstone of the city-county building was laid 100 years ago. It was this week. 100 years ago Friday, is it?
Yeah.
So to mark the centennial, somewhere in or near it is a time capsule. This is going back, you know, to 1916, and the plan was to open it this year, 100 years later, but it wasn't found. Is there any update on that? Do we know what happened to that thing?
No. No. I mean, we've been using all sorts of technology to be able to try to see through walls and find metal clubs and organizations that do this type of thing and professional companies that have offered it for free just for the fun of it. Nobody seems to have located it. So I don't know if at some point when they were upgrading HVAC back in the 1940s or something, somebody said, hey, look at this box I found. and took it with them, or if we just haven't had any luck in locating where that box may be. Now, according to our office manager slash historian, Gloria Ferruzin, there are three time capsules somewhere buried in that building. And one of which was done by the workers who built the building themselves. So I can tell you, I've seen, the building's very interesting. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. It's if I tried to build it, I'd be tarred and feathered. I mean, with the amount of materials that they used and the cost of what they did. City was very rich back then when Mayor Armstrong did it. But it's very interesting, too. The floors in my office were pulled when we took the carpet out, and they had just decided to use like 2x4 to replace these beautiful old wooden planks. And underneath it, the insulation of the building itself is dirt and old slag.
That may be where the time capsule is.
Not under my office. Not enough room. But the thing is that it's insulated with dirt and old slag. And it's really interesting that I'm sure that that dirt and slag came from the site. And if you go back in the history of Pittsburgh, back to around 200 years ago, we used to have a galley where we would hang people. And it was at the corner of 4th and Ross, which is the corner of the city-county building. And they used to bury the people right at that site. So not sure if our building isn't insulated with the former murderers and others that may have seen their last moments at the corner of that beautiful building.
Wow. way to tamp down the excitement over the celebration.
No, there's so many great stories that we found this past year. It's just incredible. Ebenezer Denny, first mayor of the city of Pittsburgh, 1816, was a Revolutionary War hero. In fact, he fought at the Battle of Yorktown with George Washington when Cornwallis surrendered. And if you ever see the painting, Cornwallis Surrenders, it's a famous painting where Washington's sitting on his horse and Cornwallis is there. The guy who's holding the American flag, the redhead 19-year-old major, is Ebenezer Denny, the first mayor of the city of Pittsburgh. And if you ever saw the movie The Patriot, starring Mel Gibson, when he pulls that flag out that his son had stitched back together and he... Well, I don't want to ruin the rest for anyone who hasn't seen a great movie. But as he's sitting over his musket, there's a soliloquy that goes, "The only sound I heard on the battlefield was the sound of the drummer boy, the most beautiful sound I ever heard in my life, Ebenezer Denny." And they quote Ebenezer in that movie as well. He was only the mayor for 6 months. He was older. And he took the position on as a honorary role until Mayor Darrow took it on for a number of years. But it was an interesting history. And like I said, the descendants of his family will be marching in the parade, as will the descendants of over 40 mayors.
And some former mayors will be there?
Mayor Murphy will be there. Mayor Ravenstahl called last week to say that he wouldn't be able to be there.
But we'll have Mayor Murphy, and that's certainly representative of...
Oh, yeah,
of
and the O'Connor family, the Caligiuri family, Sophie's family... The Flahertys, I mean, it will be the Lawrences, it will be all those mayors. But really going back throughout the history of the city, it's kind of interesting. You start finding out people like Jake and Maggie Gyllenhaal are actually descendants of a former mayor of Pittsburgh. And there's a whole bunch of other people. The character Alice from Alice in Wonderland was a descendant of the mayor of Pittsburgh. And it's really interesting kind of stuff out there.
Well, it's also... a sobering thought when you stop and realize just how many former mayors are no longer with us. Who really should be.
Yeah.
Were it not for tragic circumstances. We're talking with Mayor Bill Peduto, and we will take your calls, your questions at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. We will continue with the mayor. We'll take your calls. We'll get to your questions, but we need to take a break. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Mayor Peduto is our guest today. And one of the things that we are highlighting in our conversation today is Pittsburgh's celebration of its 200th birthday, a two-day party commemorating the day Pittsburgh was incorporated as a city 200 years ago, Friday, July 8th, 1816. You can join the conversation with a comment or question at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. And Mayor, before we move on to other things, you wanted to mention the story behind one of Pittsburgh's mayors that plays prominently into this whole bicentennial narrative today.
I don't know if it plays as much into the bicentennial narrative as it does about the politics that we see in this country today. So back in 1850, there was a street preacher named Joe Barker. And Joe would preach down basically where the convention center is today. And what he preached about mainly was hate. And the hatred was towards the immigrants who were coming to Pittsburgh. And in 1850, those were the Catholics, the Germans and the Irish, who were settling in the areas around the Strip District and in Lawrenceville. And he preached so much so that he threatened the life of the bishop, and the mayor of Pittsburgh at that time had him arrested and put in jail. So while Joe was in jail, his friend said, "Hey, you know who'd make a great mayor? Joe." So they decided to run him while he was in prison on a new political party. And it's the only person who's ever been elected from this political party in Pittsburgh history. It's called the Anti-Catholic Party. And he was a write-in candidate, and he won. So they release him from prison to be able to get sworn into office in January. But the pardon never comes from the governor. So after he gets sworn in, instead of spending the night in the office, he goes back to jail, and he spends his first night as mayor in prison. And he gets his pardon the next day, and he becomes the mayor. One of the first acts that he does is he fires all the police officers. FOP thinks I'm tough on them. So he ends up hiring his friends to be the police of Pittsburgh, which starts sort of a civil war in the streets. He then arrests the bishop of the Catholic Church, and the bishop was arrested for an illegal sewer tap-in at Mercy Hospital. The bishop is in prison. The Catholic Cathedral, which is on Grant Street, where the Union Trust Building is now, that sort of has that church on the top of it.
Right.
I often think that Frick did that to memorialize the first cathedral, is burned to the ground. So when you think about the politics of today and how there's all this talk about the Muslims, and back in 1850, it was the Catholics. And what's interesting is now the majority of people who identify with the religion in the city are Catholic. And Joe Barker's descendant is a professor at Duquesne University, which is a Catholic university, by the Spiritan Fathers. And Joe has that 1 year that he is the mayor, and it would be about a decade after the Civil War. He tries to run for office again, never is elected, that he is found decapitated on the railroad tracks in Allegheny City.
What an incredible story.
And his descendants will be marching in the parade.
It's quite a group that will be represented.
Yeah, but it's interesting to think about where we are today in the political discourse of today's politics, and to think sometimes that this is the only time that it's happened. It happens in cycles, and it's always the new group who's always the target. Mm-hmm. And at one point, those were our grandparents.
Well, I have nothing left among my topics that could possibly top that. But the last time we spoke, you were working hard to get a $50 million federal Smart City Challenge grant to redesign Pittsburgh's transportation system. As we know, Columbus got the grant. So will the redesign still move forward? And if so, how?
So yes, and man, is that disappointing. So there's been a couple things that we tried that haven't succeeded. One was a program with Bloomberg Foundation that Pittsburgh wasn't selected, and the other is this one. I really, really, really wanted this. I think the thing about it is we've now identified how we can design our city to be more inclusive by design, to be able to utilize technology to be able to create mobility at a better process, and at the same time create ladders of opportunity for social mobility, and to overlay it with energy systems that will make us less reliant upon fossil fuels, and at the same time provide lower cost utilities so that we can address two major factors of affordable housing: transportation and utility costs. So we are in the process now of taking apart everything we put together over the past 6 months and creating smaller projects in order to be able to, over the next 10 years instead of 3 years, be able to see this happen, and identifying partners for funding sources that are everything from local companies like Duquesne Light and People's Gas to our foundation community and our universities. And it will take a longer time, but we're committed to do it. The Department of Transportation was also very, very interested in our smart traffic signals, a project that was developed through Carnegie Mellon University. We have already implemented the smartest traffic signals in the world, and we're building them here. These are signals that are able to communicate to each other in real time, looking and using technology to see how far traffic's queued and create algorithms to move it better, identifying pedestrians and people who ride bikes as well to create safer systems. And then they have the ability to learn, to actually learn traffic patterns by time and different scenarios to actually increase mobility by 33% or more. I think DOT would like to see us pilot that on a larger scale. And I think we can find the state as a partner and maybe a couple foundations to come up with a gap financing to do it.
Last Friday, you teamed up with the Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority to update water quality and customer service issues. If I'm reading the 2015 annual water quality report correctly, lead levels have risen in parts per billion. How is this being addressed?
Well, it's significant, because if you go back to around 2001, we were probably at 4 parts, and now in 2013, we were at 14.8. which means in a very short time period, it's increased significantly. A couple of takeaways from that. Number one, back in 2013, there should have been all sorts of red flags, because once we're at 15, we're out of compliance with federal standards. Now, there's over 5,000 water systems nationally that are out of compliance, so it's not something that's isolated to Pittsburgh and Flint. However, you don't want to be one of those 5,000. You want to be able to be proactive in addressing it. Number two, the problem isn't from the main infrastructure. It isn't from the main PWSA lines. It is really from the lines that connect the house to the main line. A lot of those pipes that were used in the construction of Pittsburgh homes were lead. And the corrosion of 100 years has an effect on the amount of lead that then comes out of your spigot or your shower. So what we're encouraging people to do is we'll provide free testing for your home. We'll deliver the testing. We'll pick it up. All you have to do is notify PWSA that you want to be tested. We found that within the vast majority, the houses are in compliance and are at lower levels. But there are some, 5%, I believe, that came out that weren't. So that is something that we have to be cognizant of. On the long-term plans, on the infrastructure of PWSA, like I said, most of it is not where the problems occur, but if there are any areas that there is lead, we'll be replacing it. And on the secondary side, on how we treat the water to expose less corrosion, we're now testing out 4 different additives, everything from silicate to phosphorus to the different standards that are accepted by the EPA. And we have third parties working, experts in the field, scientists, researchers from universities, to help us to find the best way to deliver safe water to our customers. But the biggest point is, and I think where we may have dropped the ball back in 2013, we're providing even the bad information to the public. So any information that we get, immediately we're sharing with the public so that they're aware.
Then there are the billing issues, and many city residents have not received a bill for some time. I'm a resident of Pittsburgh. I haven't received a PWSA bill in 7 months. So if I'm any indication, a lot of folks haven't received a bill in the calendar year of 2016. What's being done to address that issue?
So we instituted about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, a new system to be able to automatically receive data. So somebody doesn't have to go up and read the meter, a new system that is a wireless technology to be able to transmit that data. What we didn't do back then was make sure that it was compatible with Alka-Seltzer's information and with the software and hardware presently being used by PWSA. So for the past year, we have been working with consultants to be able to make it compatible. The majority now, the vast majority, over 90% of those that are on PWSA system, now it works. Those in the South Hills, however, are on Penn American system, and it still is not compatible with Penn American. So in the meantime, there will be estimates taken based upon sewage rates, because that's the only part that PWSA has to estimate what the amount of water usage is until such time that it will be a compatible system. But this was, again, something that should have been figured out well before the implementation ever started. It's being caught up to. The system is also very inadequate for being able to address large commercial. And so that's being done literally by going out and reading the meters again.
So should people just wait till they finally get a bill, or should you go on down there or call them? I'm hesitant to. I usually just go down there,
yeah,
because so you call, you're on hold forever.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's been improved upon too. The amount of time that it takes now to get a person to talk to you has been greatly reduced. We've actually brought in people to help to train the people who answer those calls. And there's still more improvement to do, but it is within industry standards for the first time in a long time. The billing will recognize the fact that people can't pay it all at once. And if it's under a certain amount, I can't remember the amount right now, you'll have 3 months to pay it. If it's over a different amount, you'll have 6 months to pay it. And if you're in a situation where you're not able to do that, we'll work individually with people. We're not out to penalize people for mistakes that have been made internally.
And the information has been passed along to us that to order a free lead test kit, PWSA has tweeted numbers to call. They are available at PGH2O on Twitter at PGH2O and on the at Essential Pittsburgh Twitter accounts. So that's one way that you can go. There is a tweet from Nettie, who says, she's a regular listener. She says, you are invited. Okay, this is an imagine this scenario question. You are invited to the William Penn Hotel for lunch. You can bring five former mayors from any time period. Who do you choose?
Well, that's a great question. David Lawrence would be definitely one. I think of him as being transformational, of building out a city that was able to pivot from heavy industry to corporate, and saw his success. I also am on the complete opposite side of how he believed neighborhood revitalization was done. He did it with a wrecking ball. I feel I'm sort of stitching back together the remnants of the 1940s and 50s for my time here.
That's one.
That's one.
Four to go.
I guess Ebenezer, just to be,
sure.
You know, what was it like down, you know, especially those trips that people had to take by horseback from Virginia to Pittsburgh, and the paths and the trails, and imagining what it would have been like back then with all the mature ancient forests. It must have been incredible. I mean, this area must have been incredibly beautiful. The other three, I don't know. I would
scratch my back with a hacksaw.
Sophie, I had the opportunity to have dinner with her a few times, so I was trying to think of people I didn't.
She's the only woman, so you might as well.
Well, all right, we'll throw Sophie in there. That should be.
You might dominate the conversation, but what the
she
heck?
She always was wonderful. I used to end up going to Starbucks in Squirrel Hill, and when I was a council member, and just having coffee with her, so just to hear her tell me stories about, you know, what it was like when I talked to, you know, David Lawrence and Davey, and Davey would say, and I was just like, wow, connection directly there.
Yeah.
And then Joe Armstrong, who was Joe the Builder, who built out this city during, he was sworn in basically 100 years to the date that I was, And people talk about how fast things are developing in Lawrenceville and things are developing so fast in East Liberty. Imagine Oakland, just boom, all of a sudden there's a university, a hospital, a museum, two universities, another hospital, and this
and a
entire
ballpark.
Everything being built around that same time period. Would I bring Joe Barker in for kicks and giggles?
Ooh.
No, probably not.
There's a lot of hate there.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who the others would be. There's a great history with all of them. So in the hallway, we moved all the pictures of the mayors out of the conference room because, number one, not all the pictures of the mayors were there, and there was no room left to put the ones that had been forgotten. But underneath each of their pictures is a little history of what they did while they were the mayor. And
like your Hall of Fame plaque.
Yeah, it's really nice. And it was done by James Hill in my office, who is probably our alternative historian of the office, who took the time to learn a little bit about each and give them their credit.
Let's end on this one last postscript to the Stanley Cup playoffs. The mayors of Tampa Bay and San Jose, who lost friendly wagers to you, are paying off their debt before you send Tim McNulty to collect. and unlike in past years with this sort of thing, nonprofits.
Yeah.
Are benefiting, setting a new standard. Who came up with this idea? This was your idea, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was actually started with the mayor of Cincinnati during the Cincinnati Steelers game. We decided to help food kitchens in our cities, and the beneficiary was Light of Life when we won that game. So Mayor Buckhorn and I are both Penn Staters. He was a KDR. I was a PICA, which are two fraternities too close together to get along. That's what he used to say. So we have this, he's helped me getting to know people in the U.S. Conference of Mayors, National League of Cities. And so we reached out and we decided veterans. Tampa has a large veterans presence. Pittsburgh has a large veterans presence. And we decided the Veterans Leadership Program. So they just cashed their check for $1,000 that they're going to be using to help some vet families. But the bigger thing was with Mayor Liccardo, we exchanged
San Jose,
we exchanged jerseys, and then we sent them back. So he put on and wore a Sidney Crosby jersey all day in San Jose. And there's pictures of him wearing it. And the beautiful thing about it, not only was Sid the Conn Smythe winner for the MVP, but he also signed the jersey. So this is a one-of-a-kind piece of Penguins in Pittsburgh history. And what we're going to do is auction it off. And we're going to sell only 1,000 tickets. And we're going to make the ticket price $20 so anybody can afford it. And at the end of this summer, you'll have a chance to own Pittsburgh history. But the beautiful thing about it, $10,000 of that money will be going back to the Veterans Leadership Program, and $10,000 will be going to the Hill House. And those two organizations were the beneficiaries in the Stanley Cup.
It's a great idea and a great outcome of a great Stanley Cup
playoff
season for sure.
I ended up watching, my cable went out, and like my cable box died. It started flashing 8-8, 8-8, 8-8. I'm like,
what happens even to the mayor?
Yeah, and then it just goes out. And I mean, just boom, no power. So I'm sitting at home last night, just on YouTube, and I decided to finally start watching. I hadn't done anything looking back at the playoffs. And watching some of the different things that Showtime has out there, and then the parade itself, and then highlights from it. And it just made me so happy. It was a magical playoff.
It really was. And they were saluting for 4th of July, they were saluting on NHL Network American players. So, of course, Phil Kessel from the great state of Wisconsin, such a big part of the victory. Mayor, we could go on and on, but
yeah.
I think there were some people waiting for you outside, so I'll let you get to them. But in the meantime, happy 200th birthday. Again, yeah. You look great for 200, but
happy
it's going to be
birthday, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, great weekend for the city of Pittsburgh and all the celebrations starting Friday and then the parade on Saturday. Thanks again, Mayor Peduto. It's always great to see you.
Thank you.
Coming up, incarcerated individuals face serious challenges when it comes to recidivism rates. We'll look at a pilot program providing Pell Grants to inmates so they can pursue post-secondary education. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.